Let's review the weekend's racing action from Flemington. And joining us from the Trial Files is Matt Welsh. How are you, Matt?
I'm very well, Nardi. You're going a little bit better than Chautauqua, of course, stayed in the barriers again in his barrier trial this morning. But looking forward to ripping through the Flemington card from Saturday.
Yeah, of course, that's the big news of the morning, where they took him out to Cranbourne and he just didn't want to budge. And that's time number four now. So he's going to take a break. And obviously they will be totally reassessing what they do with him in the future. But it may well be the last time that we've seen him on the racetrack. And when they lose that will to race, Matt, they let you know, and he's letting us know, I think.
Yeah, he certainly is. I listened to Rupert Lee this morning, who was adamant that the horse is 100% sound, which may have been some reason you could explain why he wanted to stay in the stall. So given that, it's clearly a behavioural trait that he's picked up. And they're going to have a crack, I think, at getting him back after a spell. We'll wait and see. But look, he's done a huge job on the racetrack and certainly would deserve retirement if that's the way they decide to head.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about a couple of things before we get into the review from the weekend. First of all, the rail was in the 7 metre position at Flemington. How do you think the track played?
Look, I think it played very well, Nadia. I actually went out onto the track on Saturday and spoke to the track manager, Liam O'Keefe, very briefly, but also Darren Potter, who's a very good track walker. And he'd just been around for his second or third trot around the track for the week. And he said that the track was very even as opposed to the previous weekend. And I think it certainly raced like that. It was definitely noticeable that the outside section of the track down the straight, the grass wasn't quite as thick and it looked like it was going to race quicker. And I think that was certainly the case. We saw all the straight track winners come down the outside fence. But look, it was certainly a much better track than what we saw on Newmarket and Australia Cup Day. And I think it raced very fairly.
We had the issue come up from Saturday with the scratching when Limestone arrived on track. And this has been something, unfortunately, that's happened over the last few months where Racing Victoria vets and stewards have elected to scratch horses that they believe, through their examination, have been lame, where, you know, the trainers are adamant that there's nothing wrong with their horse. Sometimes in these situations, a bit of common sense has got to prevail. The trainer knows their horse backwards. And in particular, when we're dealing with some of these high-profile trainers, they want their horses fit as possible and wouldn't present them at the races unless they were right.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. It's a bit of a double-edged sword. I mean, the vet needs to err on the side of caution because we are dealing with punters. We're dealing with a huge amount of money when it comes to Saturday racing especially. So you can understand and sympathise with the vet. My take on this, though, is that clearly Limestone has a unique gait when it walks. We saw the same with Jukebox last year and Kieran Maher. I would suggest that you send the vet around to, you know, these stables well before race day when a horse is identified as having what could be considered a somewhat scratchy or unusual action. Take some video of it and do it, you know, two or three times. Build a profile that the vet can refer to on race day. Get this out of the way beforehand so that if any issues arise, you've got a reference point to go back to and say, look, here's a video of this horse in fine fettle, trotting around or walking around back at its stables. This is just the way it is. I mean, I know from a footy perspective, you look at a player like Jesse Hogan, for example, and you see the way he walks when he's going at slow pace or just a very slow jog, and you think, geez, he looks like he's injured. But the reality is that it's just the gait that some people display, and there has to be a better way of dealing with it. And I'm not suggesting for a second whether Limestone was or wasn't lame. That's not for me to decide. But I just think there should be a reference point because clearly Darren Weir thought the horse was good to go. The head vet, and I believe a couple of others also on course, suggested that she wasn't, and that may well have been the case. But simply building a profile on these horses would eradicate when any of these issues come up, I believe, Nadia.
Well, I can understand why they do her on the side of caution, because you are dealing with a lot of money when it comes to these races, and the worst taste you can get in a punter's mouth is when you find out after a race that, you know, you see it blow in the betting and then a horse is found to be lame after the race. Look, it doesn't create a very good look, but as the point you bring up, look, the majority of horses, they're not perfect animals, you know. They've all got a bit of a funny action or a funny gait, and each horse is an individual. Surely there's got to be, you know, some consultation too with maybe the trainer's own vet who looks after that horse every day. They are aware of how their horses gallop and how they move and things like that. So, look, I can see it's an issue, and I do see the steward's point of view where they do err on that side of caution, because look, there is a lot of money now being involved where you've got a lot of punting interest, but there also seems to be maybe an area that can be improved.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other issue with Limestone was that she was vetted at Moonee Valley at her previous start. Yep. She was a big drifter that night. I think that certainly must have played on the minds of stewards in making this decision. She knocked up badly there and ran poorly. Look, I think the way that vetting is done behind the stalls in general needs to be looked at. I think there's far more inclination to give favourites and those well in the market many more chances behind the barriers than, for example, longer price runners. But yeah, I think that this is something that could be dealt with prior to race day when it comes to a horse having a scratchy or unusual action, as obviously Limestone does. Send the vets out there, send someone from Racing Victoria out well in advance, have the trainer notify them that, look, we've got this horse, it has an unusual action, come and video it three or four times in its training, then they can refer back to it on race day, and I think that would eliminate this happening in the future.
It's a very good point that you do bring up, Matt, and anyone that's got a view on the issue, you can send us a tweet through to the station at RSN927. But let's get into the program of racing from Saturday, and we kick things off race one with a 1,200 metre mare's race down the straight. What were some of the key betting moves in this race, Matt?
Look, probably the best backed was the toppy, French Emotion, who was first up. She was $9 into $5 prior to race day. She drifted slightly when the betting got serious to $5.50, but she was certainly very firm first up for Chris Waller. The eventual winner, Key Lister, for Darren Weir, was $3 into $2.80, and certainly the best backed of the two favourites. The other one was Hear the Chant for Team Hayes and Tom Dabernick, who was $2.70 out to $3. So not a huge amount of activity, but French Emotion was a longer price move, and the eventual winner, Key Lister, was certainly firm.
They've gone above par through the first section, and I suppose one of the key points of the race was Hear the Chant coming through down the inside where all the rest went out wide.
Yeah, well, obviously it was the first of the day, and six of the seven jockeys decided to go to the outside, and poor old Andrew Marion was stuck down on the inside on Hear the Chant. I certainly don't think that was the place to be. Obviously, he wasn't to know that prior to race one necessarily, but as you say, they did go out hard here. There was four straight races on the day, and there were three that I'd consider they went reasonably slowly in. This was the one that they actually went at a decent tempo. They ran 21.44 seconds from the 800 to the 400, which is really quick, and then Key Lister only came home the last 400 in 23.3 seconds. So you can see that there was plenty of pressure on early. She was dominant, to be honest, over the concluding stages. She won by four lengths. She, of course, had run very well on the Oakley Plate leading into this race and backed that up. And I think she's a horse still on the up for Darren Weir. French Emotion ran home okay into second. This was the first time she'd been at 1,200 for a fair while. She had jumped out well. She looks on track, but I think she's sort of struggling at that Group 3, Group 2 level that she's been contesting in, and she's going to need to find a fairly weakish or similar sort of 1,400 metre race to be winning second up. Hard to assess here, the Chant, who, as we say, was down on the inside. I think she was in the race until about the 300 metre mark. If I look across with the line they have on the screen, she looked like she was actually in front.
Yeah, I think she was in front till about the 300 too, yeah.
And then just tired late. So, look, she's run okay. The one horse I could follow going forward is Lady Selkirk for Matthew Williams. She was resuming off a long, long break. She's better known over distances up to a mile and beyond, and I'm sure that she'll be heading to Warrnambool. That carnival's not too far away, and she was really good late, so she is a horse that I'd follow heading towards Warrnambool in a couple or 6 or 8 weeks' time.
The second race was a 1,400 metre three-year-old event, and of course the market did change somewhat when we had Iconoclasm, who was a late scratching in the race, but I suppose the real key to this was the drifter's Scarecrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Scarecrow was largely unwanted. I think Iconoclasm, when it was scratched, was about $3.90. So when you consider that Scarecrow went from $3.40 out to $3.90, and you factor in the deductions for that scratching, it was a really big drift on him. He was largely unwanted off a last start victory. The eventual winner, Holbein, for Stephen Richards, was very well backed, particularly late, $7.50 into $4.80. And the other move was a longer price move for She's a Dashing for Maddie Ellerton and Simon Zara. was $41 into $6.50 at 9:41 a.m. So that a lot of that betting was pre-post the days leading up to the race. Drifted late when the betting got serious, $5.50 out to 8. But that stable were pretty confident, I think, on one of the Melbourne radio stations during the week that that horse had run well. And punters certainly dived into She's a Dashing.
Just looking at the speed of the race, even though Holbein found the top and was the eventual winner, look, he didn't walk. They went at a fairly good clip.
No, this was one of the best performances of the day for mine by Holbein. I haven't mentioned yet, touched on it yet, but the wind was up throughout the day. The northerly winds were consistently between 20 and 30 kilometres, which is into the leaders' faces out of the circle or in the circle races, which this was one of. Holbein certainly didn't loaf at all, as you say, Nadia. He went out in very good sectionals early. They ran 83.52 here, whereas Sovereign Nation, who won the March Stakes later in the day, the open race, ran 84.12. So they've gone about four lengths quicker, and Holbein did it all from the front. Really tough performance. He was good the start prior when leading up in the race, won by Scarecrow, and I think this horse has got a big future ahead of it. Wouldn't be surprised if he steps up to the mile next start, and for mine, he was the horse to follow out of the meeting. It was a really good performance and a great ride by Benny Mellum to control the race from the front. Second was For Sure for Ellerton and Zara. Loomed into the race like it was going to challenge Holbein about 300 metres from home. I just wonder if maybe this is a 1,200-metre horse, didn't quite run out the 1,400 because just didn't quite let down the last 200 metres, but did a good job to finish second. Scarecrow was pretty plain back in fourth. I thought had every chance, maybe looking for the spelling paddock now after being up for a while and had a slightly interrupted preparation. And as I mentioned, that well-backed runner, She's a Dashing, didn't really get a lot of clear room in the straight. I thought could have potentially finished as far up the order as second with clear running. I think that's a horse that's going to continue to get better as the distances get longer. But yeah, I think Holbein Nadia was one of the best wins of the day.
We have a look at race three, three-year-old fillies open down the straight, 1,100 metres, and the betting told the tale here. All they wanted to be on was the winner.
Yeah, that's right. The winner, Demerara, she's a lovely filly. She's a big, strong filly. She's come back in great order for James Cummings this campaign. She'd won first up at Moonee Valley over 1,000 metres in good time, beating two subsequent winners in Holy Blade and Easy Beast. And as you mentioned, she was $3.40 into $1.75. We had the late scratching of Limestone thrown in there. I think Limestone was about $8 or $9 when scratched. So not huge deductions, but yeah, it was a big go on Demerara, and they certainly landed the plunge.
They landed the plunge, and they went along at a fairly good clip down the straight too.
Yeah, not too bad. They went along at a reasonable clip, I suppose, for this sort of grade. Demerara was always prominent in the run for Jake Noonan. She sort of looked like she might have been challenged 200 metres from home, but dug in really strongly over the concluding stages. I think she's a filly who can go to 1,200 metres now. She's progressing very nicely. It was a good win. I really like the trials of Plavacet leading in, and I think she did a good job to finish second for David Hayes, Ben Hayes and Tom Dabernick. She was coming off a decent spell. I think she'll improve for the run. It was a good effort by her. The one runner here I want to highlight is She Knows. She was down on the inside section of the track. There were three runners on the rail. She clearly beat those runners home, the three runners, or the other two runners on that side. And she was the fastest from the 800 to the 400 here in 21.28 seconds before really gassing out late. I'm not sure if that was fitness or potentially the fact that that inside was inferior ground, but I think she's a horse we can follow going forward. She was beaten three lengths, but I certainly think that inside ground was disadvantaged. So She Knows for Danny Williams, one to follow out of this race.
We have a look at race number four. This was the Group 3 race for the two-year-olds over 1,200 metres, the fillies, and the betting here, they're all over the winner.
Yeah, they certainly were. Kulasa, another horse who was very well backed. The Tab reported that took 61% of all money on the race, $2.30 into $2.10, and Damien Oliver did the job for punters landing the money.
He did, and as far as the early speed, look, they didn't go that hard in this race either.
No, they absolutely walked. Kulasa was prominent early. And Naduri actually took up the running for David Brightoak. They went 25.92 seconds through the first 400, which was very, very slow. The one runner I really want to highlight here is Crystal Eyes, again for David Hayes, Ben Hayes and Tom Dabernick. She's come home in the third best last 600 and the best last 400 metre splits of the day, which for a two-year-old with four straight races on the day, four sprint races, that's excellent going. I think Jake Duffy was intent on getting to the outside rail in the early stages from gate one and probably just ended up held up a little bit too long on Crystal Eyes, and she was certainly working in the line very well. So that was a great run by her. She'd run well on debut at Ballarat the start prior, and I think has a big future and can step up to 1,400 metres now. Kulasa brought good form to the race, had run second to a couple of smart ones, including Prairie Fire, and its two starts to date. A deserved victory. It was a tough win. Crone finished second for Darren Weir, did a good job up against the outside rail and did want to hang a little bit. So that might have actually cost it victory, ultimately being beaten just 0.1 of a length. But yeah, the runner I'm really keen to follow here is Crystal Eyes, and I think it's a horse that will be winning in coming weeks.
We now have a look at the feature race on the program, which was race 5, the Blamey, Group 2, 1600 metre race. The betting was interesting here. Look, Toss and Stardom was very well supported, but gee, didn't they come for hell of a street? It almost halved its opening quote.
Yes, yeah, certainly did. $7 into $4.50 on the day. So Hell of a Street was well tried. And I think a lot of that was how people mapped the race. He looked to get a pretty easy time of it out in front. And he was gifted the lead ultimately. But yeah, that was a good go there. I think the two favourites just drifted as the market percentage came down closer to race time. Nadia, Humidor jumped $2.90, having opened around that $2.60 mark. And Toast and Stardom jumped about $2.60, I think. So, look, the best backed was Hell of a Street, but there was certainly no massive push against either of the Weir favourites.
No, there wasn't. The speed in the race, probably as most mapped, they weren't going to go hard. They've gone below par through the first section, and Hell of a Street was able to lead easily.
Yeah, Hell of a Street went out in 51.64 for the first 800 metres. And just for comparison, a Snip Fit in race 8, who led them up over a similar distance, went out 51.14. So that was a very comfortable tempo, or should we say pretty moderate tempo early for this grade of horse. I think ultimately that slow tempo was played against Toast and Stardom here, Nadia. What we saw was the ex-Japanese runner was just extremely keen in the run. And we've seen him do it a couple of times off slow tempos. He wants to over race, and I think that's brought him undone here. He's clearly a tricky horse to catch because he can throw in a bad run every now and then. And most of them, as I say, are off moderate tempos. He was beaten a long way out. Look, Cool Chap and Humidor finished first and second here. They've dashed home in strong late sectionals. I think this is a beautiful pipe opener for Humidor to head up to Sydney now with a good, strong fitness base. And no doubt Darren Weir will put the blinkers on him at some point in the next two starts. And I think he's right on track for the Queen Elizabeth. I'm looking forward to seeing him get up to 2,000 metres. And I certainly think he's even better in a high-pressure race. So to get this win on the board, it was a great effort. I think he's a horse who we can follow in coming weeks. Cool Chap was, you know, brilliant at the end of the day. He's come home in almost the same sectionals as Humidor. He looks on track. I thought, if anything, Hell of a Street probably didn't go quick enough early. I'm not sure he would have beaten Humidor either way, but I think he probably would have got a little bit closer if he just ran them along a little bit quicker early, because his advantage is to be up on speed and free rolling. And as I say, they did go at moderate sections. But yeah, Humidor, great win. You know, he's arguably the second best horse in the country at the moment. And Toast and Stardom was disappointing. And the explanation I'd put down is the slow tempo played against him.
Just with Humidor, look, he's not the easiest horse to ride. I don't know whether it's a soundness issue or whatever with him, but gee, he really wants to lay in, doesn't he?
Yeah, he did want to lay in late, and I thought it was going to cost him victory for a moment when Cool Chap burst through the gap and looked like he was going to win for a fleeting moment, the outsider in the small field. But look, on the line, he was actually doing it quite comfortably when Zara was able to straighten him up a little bit. But, you know, as we know, when those blinkers went on in the Cox Plate last year, he put in the performance of a lifetime. And I wonder if they might save them for the Queen Elizabeth, which is the big money race up in Sydney in a couple of weeks' time.
It'll be a brilliant clash. Well, that takes us a little bit over halfway through the program from Flemington on Saturday. This is Winners on RSN 927, reviewing the action from Flemington with the Trial Files' Matt Welsh. We'll be back in a moment. 22:11 on this Monday edition of Winners. We are with Matt Welsh from the Trial Files reviewing the action from Flemington on Saturday. We're up to race number six now, which of course was the first leg of the quaddy. It was a benchmark 80 to be run over 2,000 metres. And the betting in this race, Matt, well, it was a fairly wide race. Who were some of the better back runners?
Yeah, it certainly was. Probably the notable drifter was Cullingworth, trained by Darren Weir, $5 out to $10. He was unwanted. Some of the best backed were Condamine, $6.50 into $4.60. He excels for Richard Lamming, $5 into $3.80. And the ultimate winner, no commitment from Colin, from the Colin Little stable, was very well backed from midday onward. He was at $13 at midday, ended up jumping $7.50. So once again, I think the punters had a pretty good day and was spot on the mark again with no commitment.
And they've gone at a strong tempo over this trip too.
Yeah, they certainly did, especially for this grade of race. This was only a benchmark 80 race, and they went out at very fast sections. Cullingworth for the Weir stable ended up leading. Ethan Brown got him rolling off gate one, dug him up early, and they went out at 49.62 seconds for the first 800, which was very quick on the day and very quick for this class of race. And what was notable was Cullingworth was actually pulling. I think probably just being fired up out of the stalls, he got a little bit keen, wanted to over race. He ended up dropping out, but I would forgive that run somewhat because he did do a lot of work early. The race favourite, He Excels, settled second outside that speed and obviously did a lot of work into what was a strong breeze. So he did a very good job to hang on and run as well as he has. He was only beaten sort of the last 100 metres. He dropped out noticeably over the last 100 metres, but I thought his run was the run of the race, He Excels. No commitment, just a brilliant ride here from Benny Thompson. He kept the horse covered up. All the way into the early part of the home straight, didn't spend a penny in the run. He settled midfield and then just presented with his run late, came off at Mr. Optimistic's heels with about 200 metres to go and nabbed him right on the line in a close photo. The other runner worth mentioning here was Addison. This mare's had a lot of people have had a fair opinion of her. She was good in the early part of the summer. Look, she ran well. The race was run to suit with that strong tempo. She was flashing late, but I thought did what I'd expect of her without getting too excited. But He Excels, I think, was a great run here to hold on and finish fourth in what was a very strong tempo race. Nadia?
We got a race seven. This was the March Stakes listed event, 1,400 metres. And they come for The Answer, My Friend. It was a big firmer. Overshare got the drifts.
Yeah, The Answer, My Friend, easily the best backed runner on the day across the whole program, was $5.50 into $4.40 in the days leading up to the races, and then they just didn't stop backing him. Once the big money chimed in late, he was $4.40 into $2.60, and I think the only thing that stopped him jumping shorter was the race actually starting, Nadia. The other big go early, or leading up to race day, was Mask of Time, who was first up for the Aaron Purcell Yard. It had just the one start in Australia, and he was $26 into $9. That was most of that activity took place either leading up to race day or on race morning. I think once the market settled and the sort of big money chimed in, he just stayed pretty firm. And the other, or the eventual winner, was Sovereign Nation, was $10 out to $15 and largely unwanted.
Exactly. It was a brilliant ride, though, by Oliver in a race where they sort of went pretty slowly.
Yeah, they didn't go overly hard. I think Coldstone jumped really well, and I think the fact that Coldstone jumped as well sort of left Mark Zara happy just to sit outside the leader, which looked the right call at the start of the race. And they, from that point on, they did go very slowly, as you say. They ran 56.56 for the first 800, which for a horse like The Answer, My Friend, is well below what his normal lead speed is. But he did settle very well. He travelled extremely well into the straight. He looked like he was going to win at the 200 or 300 metre mark, but just maybe fitness gave out late first up at the 1400 metres. And the other thing I'd say here is a horse like Sovereign Nation at this grade of race is normally settling 5, 6, 7, 8 lengths off the speed, whereas as a result of the slow tempo, he was only 2 lengths off them on the turn. So he was sort of in uncharted territory there. Great ride by Damien Oliver, as you say, to touch off The Answer, My Friend, on the line. Seabird showed a return to form here. Had been out of form for some time, but did well to finish third. The three-year-old overshare for Team Hawks, this horse settled leaders back and he pulled the entire way. So his effort to run fifth, only beaten 0.4 of a length, was very good and showed he's right up to this grade. He's doing a good job at the moment. And Burham's Buzz back in the field for Ostie Coffee, ridden by Harry Coffee. He was also hitting the line very strongly. And just touching on Mask of Time, the import, who was well backed, as I mentioned, settled at the tail of the field and was another one who pulled badly. So the gap, 1.75 lengths between first and ninth here, Nadia, does make the form somewhat questionable for mine. The slow tempo certainly made it difficult for some. There were plenty pulling in the run, but look, Sovereign Nation did a good job to win. I think Burham's Buzz certainly hit the line strong enough and could be one to follow, a bit of a sneaky one to follow going forward.
We have a look at race 8, and we were discussing betting fluctuations earlier on, and I think this was a key race to discuss betting behaviour when things happen, whether it's horses being vetted or ones being reshod behind the gates. And top of the range was clearly, as they head around at the start and even when they're at the start, the best back runner in the race. But when she had to be reshod behind the gates, gee, didn't it turn around and they come for Portman?
Yeah, spot on. You're absolutely right. It was $3.90 into $2.60 top of the range before, as you say, having to be reshod behind the stalls. And in that last minute or two of betting was $2.60 out to $3.20, which is a big drift. And, you know, I think there's a lot of talk these days, or there's a lot of discussion amongst punters about how, you know, you don't want to be on a horse who's being reshod or who's playing up behind the stalls. And in the information or the age of technology we live in, the information about how horses are parading behind the stalls or things that are going on are quickly relayed back to, you know, punters sitting at their computers. And as a result, we saw top of the range drift late. I don't think that reshotting was the reason she was beaten, though. But that was really interesting. And then Portman late, as you say, $4.60 into $3.40. And as they jumped, those two controlled the betting. The eventual winner, Soho Ruby, went around $6.50 and, largely slipped under punters' radars, I'd suggest.
Yeah, exactly. Really got out in betting. There was a bit of a flurry when markets first opened a couple of days earlier, but she really got out in betting. It was a race they probably only went at a moderate tempo, too.
Yeah, they did. Snipfit led them up, as I mentioned, trained by Kenny Keyes. And they did really slow from the 1200 to the 800 metre mark. And this is where probably Benny Melamon Soho Ruby won the race, and the fates of Top of the Range and also Turak Playboy, who ultimately flashed late into second and third, was sealed. Benny Melon was in the three wide line when the pace really slackened. He had cover from the horse in front of him, which was Filbert Way. Being in that three wide line when the pace slackened, it meant that those horses propelled forward very quickly and, you know, went from being at the tail of the field to right in play as they came around the home bend. And at the same time, Top of the Range and Turak Playboy were getting shuffled further back in the field. So that was where the race was won for mine. Soho Ruby's been up for a while now. She continues to put in this grade. I think it was just a win, but she's a consistent mare that will keep doing the same thing week in, week out. Top of the Range is a pretty exciting horse for mine, for Michael Moroney. She should have won this race, as we say. She flashed late into second, another couple of bounds and she wins. I don't think the race was run to suit. She didn't enjoy that slowdown mid-race and, as I said, didn't have clear room. So it was a great run by her. Turak Playboy flashed as well late into third. And, you know, finished off just about as well as Top of the Range. A runner worth highlighting is Pow Wow. It was having its first start for the Hayes and Dominic yard. Had out a couple of jump outs at home, and he just pulled the whole way. I thought he'll be better for that run. He looked really fresh. I think second up, he might be worth following. Did a good job. All honours with the winner here, Soho Ruby. All honours with Benny Mellum, really. It was a great ride. But Top of the Range, certainly a horse to follow going forward.
We then go to race 9. This was an 80 over 1,200 metres down the straight. Look, they only went out in the even tempo here.
Yeah, they did. There was very little betting interest, really, in this race. They didn't go overly hard early, but they have come home in the best sectionals of the day, particularly the winner, Milwaukee, 44-34 and 33-10 for the last 800 and last 600. Look, he's a good horse. He went up to the Gold Coast, ran in the Magic Millions Cup behind Care to Think. He's done a lot of travelling lately. He's raced up in Sydney. He's obviously done a bit of racing here in Victoria. I thought he did a great job to win this race. I think he's a horse that can probably go back up to Sydney and be competitive in some of the sort of listed Group 3 sprints, 1400 metre races over there, Carnival. In second, we had Handsome Thief for the Weir stable. Look, he's done a good job too. He was hanging off the inside of the pack. He was closer to the middle of the track, which is never ideal in these sprint races. You don't sort of want to be alone off the inside of the pack coming down the centre. He did a good job. A horse really worth highlighting here is Galaxy Raider, having its first start for the Graham Begg stable.
Oh, wasn't it a run?
Oh, it was unbelievable, Nadia. He looked like he was going to run last at the 400-metre mark. And what happened to him is he was behind a wall of horses as they really started to put the sprint on. As I mentioned, they came home fast sectionals for the last 800 and 600, and he was unfortunately behind a wall of horses, and the gap between first and last was just growing while he had nowhere to go. And then you can see him weaving his way through the field late. He ended up finishing fifth, I think it was, fourth or fifth, and another 50 metres after the post, he's right up there with Handsome Thief and Milwaukee. It was just an unbelievable run. He is a horse who has a habit of teasing punters, but as I say, he jumped out very well leading into that first start for the Graham Begg stable. Graham Begg's got his horses flying, I think, 1,400 metres next start. As long as he doesn't come up too short, I think Galaxy Raider is certainly one of the horses to follow out of the meeting. Steel of Madrid was up in class here, coming off three wins at its previous three starts. I don't think it enjoyed going as slowly as they did early, and was a horse who pulled quite noticeably in the early stages of the race. So I think Steel of Madrid did a reasonable job. And Al Mally Hoff, another one for Osti Coffee here, I noticed finishing off the race quite well. But look, Milwaukee's done a good job. I think Galaxy Raider, provided he's not over bet next start, is certainly a horse we can follow going forward. I think he's going well for the new stable.